Good morning and welcome to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Kathleen Sabo. Last week, New Mexico was hit with heavy, persistent rainfall, resulting in record and near-record flows on rivers, causing them to overflow their banks and flood homes and businesses, and causing rainwater to flood low-lying areas. Many in the state are dealing with the aftermath of this surprisingly strong and ongoing precipitation, wondering where to turn for information and assistance, and wondering if this was a rare occurrence or one that we must be prepared for in the future. This morning we have a number of guests who can answer your questions in the aftermath of the heavy rains and flooding. Joining me in the studio are the Secretary of the Homeland Security and Emergency Management Department, Gregory Myers, New Mexico in-depth reporter Laura Paskus, and Sean Bennett, meteorologist in charge at the National Weather Service Office in Albuquerque. Welcome to all of you.
Good morning.
Joining us a bit later by telephone from Santa Fe will be Heidi Kraffel with the New Mexico Department of Health and Dennis McQuillan with the New Mexico Environment Department. Well, Sean Bennett of the National Weather Service, let's begin with you. To get a better understanding of what happened last week, what weather patterns or events conspired to bring us that persistent record rainfall and the resulting flooding?
Well, I think the best way to describe it was that we had a river of air from the tropics that came up out of Old Mexico and persisted over the state for the week that we had the rain. And it was persistent because to the west, over near Las Vegas, New Mexico, or Las Vegas, Nevada, there was an upper-level low that was kind of stuck in the pattern. And so it just continued to circulate the air up out of Mexico into New Mexico, and it persisted. And when it came in, the tropical air is just abundant moisture. And and a couple of things allow that moisture to be released, just the daily heating, which will create the thunderstorms we see. But more than that, it was just the uplift of the air up over the mountainous terrain of New Mexico that released all that moisture, the instability in that air. And it just persisted for many, many, many days.
Now, we have a graphic up on our KUNM website that listeners can take a look at. We credited the National Weather Service in putting it up there. But what kind of amounts of rainfall are we talking about?
Well, this is an extreme event, or in scientific term, it's an outlier in our data. We what's really unusual is the persistent nature. I like that term you use because we don't usually see this many days of consecutive rain. This looked more like what you see up in the Northwest where I hail from, and that's unusual. What we usually see is an event that might last 1, 2, or 3 days to come in with a tropical wave or something like that, but this lasted much longer.
So for instance, Las Vegas, New Mexico, everybody's heard they have issues there. What kind of amounts are we talking about over that period of days?
Well, they had about 9 inches of rain. Put it in another term, a lot of the state received in that period of last week over half of the rainfall we normally receive in a whole year. But that's been good because we've been in a severe drought, an exceptional drought, really. And so the drought impacts have been mitigated somewhat. Longer term, we still have some drought impacts.
We'll get into that in depth later on. Let's bring in Secretary Myers. Good morning, Secretary Myers.
Good morning.
Thanks for making time for us, and I'm sure what has been an incredibly busy time for you. I appreciate it. And now, have you toured the state at all during this crisis?
I've been on two tours. One most recent was down to Catron County. We visited Mogollon and the Whitewater Creek area, so Glenwood. Before that, we did a tour up in McKinley County and Socorro County and also McKinley.
Are those the hardest hit parts of the state? Is that why you went to those parts?
Certainly they are among the hardest hit. There are other areas that we would like to go to if we have time. The governor, I accompanied the governor as she visited, so as we get into the recovery phase, I'll be going by vehicle and kind of touring most all areas of the state that have been damaged.
Now, even here in Albuquerque, obviously we've been able to see television or video footage, but what's it like to be on the ground or even in the air and see this devastation?
It's a bit surreal. The hard part is, these events are caused by severe flash flooding. So you have extreme walls of water that are running through areas that causes it to go over the banks or damage the homes. And, you know, so when you come in after the fact, you don't see the water at its highest level. It's already receded quite a bit.
You know, for instance, I'm in preparation. I read about walls of water 11 feet high. It sounds like a tsunami.
Yes.
You know, and the power of that coming through. So a lot of movement of vehicles and houses, I would imagine.
Yes. And one of the biggest concerns that we have is lots of rain near the burn scars that we have. Mm. So you have lots of debris coming down off of the burn forest areas as well.
So disaster upon disaster.
Exactly.
Just so our listeners know, your department, the Department of Homeland Security and Emergency Management, has been dealing with the aftermath of the flooding. What is the scope of activities and events your department has been concerned with?
Well, you know, during the events, we're primarily concerned with just the response. I activated our Emergency Operations Center. We're always a 24/7, but we have a lot more experts called in so that we can respond better. And we rely on the local communities to tell us what they need. And as they call in and say, here are our needs, we try to find the best resource to fill that.
Okay. If you would like to join in our discussion about the heavy rains and flooding experienced in New Mexico last week, there are several ways for you to participate. You may email comments to callinshow@kunm.org. You may post comments on the Call In Show webpage at kunm.org, or you may call our local number, 277-5866. That's 277-KUNM, or our toll-free number, 1-877-899-5866, with questions and comments. What questions do you have in the aftermath of the flooding, and how were you impacted by it? Please tell us. Laura Paskus, as a reporter, you've been examining the impact of the heavy rains and flooding upon Indian Country, among other issues. But before you get to relaying to us what happened there, can you tell us briefly about New Mexico in depth, in case our listeners are not familiar with you?
Oh, sure. New Mexico, you can find us, nmindepth.org online. It's a new media organization, and it's online, but we also have print and radio partners, including KUNM.
Excellent. Okay, so as for Indian Country in the aftermath of the rains and flooding, what have you found and where?
So I've been calling around to the different tribes in New Mexico. There are so many media organizations right here in Albuquerque and Santa Fe. We're kind of used to paying attention to what's happening in the cities, Las Vegas, Santa Fe, Albuquerque. And so I was interested in finding out what's happening in more rural communities, and especially in American Indian communities throughout the state. So a lot of tribes are still assessing the impacts, working with FEMA and federal agents as the waters recede, and assessing damages to roads and things like that. Two tribes that were hit particularly hard that I've talked to are the Navajo Nation, had a lot of impacts to roads and flooding, and also the Pueblo of Santa Clara, which has had three really hard years resulting from hard rains and coming off the burn scars from the Las Conchas fire and also the earlier fire up around Los Alamos. And that tribe has just gotten really hammered.
Okay, well, let's go ahead and bring in our first caller. It's Bill from Los Lunas. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning, Kathleen, and good morning to your guests. My question is directed to Secretary Myers. The governor announced last night on the news that she was distributing $750,000 of relief fund, but she stated that individual private property people that were damaged, the state couldn't help. However, they helped those oceanfront mansions and homes every time there's a hurricane. Are those oceanfront homes private property? Is it flood a flood? Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much for calling, Bill. Secretary.
Well, I'm going to struggle a little bit to talk about the Florida homes, because I don't have direct knowledge of that. But the governor is correct that due to the Constitution and the anti-donation clause, we cannot provide direct assistance to private citizens.
When you say we, you mean the state of New Mexico?
The state, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So, my department is manages all of the FEMA programs. So as FEMA provides money to the state, we manage that money. So I guess that's why I say we. So, you know, for private citizens, there is a FEMA program called Individual Assistance. And I'm not as expert at that program because it's rarely used in New Mexico. Typically, you find that program used in densely populated areas that are hit by a disaster. So Boulder, Colorado would probably have that program initiated. But typically, to have that program established, there's a minimum number of homes that have to have three criteria, essentially. They have to be uninsured, they have to be your primary residence, and there has to be major damage. And once you have collected all of that data and you meet the threshold, then you can institute that program. And we'll be assessing that to see if we qualify.
And so then how will individual homeowners know if they're going to qualify down the road? Is that something they should keep track of on your department's website? Or
well, actually, the Red Cross helps us out quite a bit. They do a lot of windshield tours to assess the damaged homes. And what we'll do is we'll collect that data. And we'll have to go back and try to assess whether or not they're insured or uninsured homes, primary residents, whether they meet the criteria.
Okay, let's go ahead and round out our panel so our callers know who we have here today. Joining us now by phone from Santa Fe are Heidi Kraffel, Environmental Health Epidemiology Bureau Chief, Epidemiology and Response Division with the New Mexico Department of Health, and Dennis McQuillan, Source Water Protection Manager, Drinking Water Bureau with the New Mexico Environment Department. Welcome to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning. We appreciate you coming on the air and sharing vital information with our listeners and then being available for questions. So, Heidi, let's begin with you. The Department of Health has put out news releases and advisories about several issues impacting health that have arisen in the aftermath of flooding around the state. And we've got some links to some things on our website, just so listeners know. But can you please tell us what the department's concerns are at this point?
Right. Well, so, for example, with all of the flooding, there's a couple of concerns. One would be structural problems. That would be first and foremost. And, of course, if the building's been pushed off its foundation, we don't want people to enter themselves because there could be damage there and it could be very dangerous. And then another real issue is the development of mold. Typically, if residents can get to their houses, et cetera, within 24 to 48 hours after the flood and start to dry things out, then mold doesn't develop. However, after that, there's a risk for development of mold, and then we have guidelines on our websites, nmtracking.org or nmhealth.org, on how you deal with that mold.
And so are those the major concerns at this point for the Health Department, Department of Health?
Yes, and there's actually another one, which is if, for example, the floodwaters had sewage in it, I know that there are some places where the sewage systems were affected, then there would also be concerns about floodwater with sewage in the house and needing to disinfect that so that people are not exposed to bacterial organisms.
Okay, and I'm sure we'll dig into these a little bit more. But Dennis McQuillan, welcome. And tell us, what issues are the Environment Department keeping track of and advising citizens about?
Part of our responsibility is to make sure that public water systems deliver safe drinking water. And if there is some good news in all of this, in that of the 1,240 public water systems we have in the state, many of which are very small, run by volunteers, only three of them so far appear to have had damage or have been compromised. And the water systems are doing exactly what they need to do with regard to issuing boil water orders, disinfecting the system, and repairing the damage. We're also involved with private domestic wells, which are not covered under the umbrella of the federal law, the Safe Drinking Water Act, like public systems are. And so we can provide advice on how to perform an emergency disinfection if the well was submerged by floodwater. And we are going to be providing some free testing to residents whose wells have been compromised. The disinfection procedure is posted on our website, and it basically involves mixing up a solution of household laundry bleach, introducing that in the well, and then flushing it through the system until you can smell chlorine at all the faucets. then you shut it in overnight, preferably, and flush the chlorine out the next day. And that will serve to disinfect the inside of your plumbing.
And that was a nice summary. I read the whole procedure, and it would take someone a bit of time, but it's certainly something that's necessary to do, is it not?
We strongly recommend it. You know, the public wells are regulated by us, but private domestic well owners like myself, I live in a house with a private well, we're not subject to that protection, so it's all voluntary. So our role here is to provide technical expertise and assistance, and the governor has directed us to provide free well testing after the disinfection procedure has been performed. Right now, we are aware of a minimum of several hundred private domestic wells that have been submerged in floodwater or otherwise compromised. That number could rise up to 1,000 or 2,000.
Okay. We're talking today about the heavy rains and flooding in New Mexico and the aftermath. Joining me in the studio are the Secretary of the Homeland Security and Emergency Management Department, Gregory Myers, New Mexico in-depth reporter Laura Paskus, and Sean Bennett, meteorologist in charge at the National Weather Service office in Albuquerque. On the phone with me is Heidi Kraffel with the next New Mexico Department of Health and Dennis McQuillan with the New Mexico Environment Department. If you would like to join in our discussion, you may email comments to callinshow@kunm.org. You may post your comments on the Call In Show webpage. You may call our local number 277-5866 or our toll-free number 1-877-899-5866 with questions and comments. What questions do you have in the aftermath of the flooding, and how were you impacted by it? We'll take a short break, and we'll be back with you in a moment.
The postcard you just received is not the KUNM decal, but if you contribute, the next time you receive one, it will be a decal. Do it now by mail or web for two chances to win VIP tickets to Ani DiFranco in October or a pair of weekend passes to the Moab Folk Festival in November. Please don't wait. Winners will be drawn on October 1st at 5 p.m. No need to donate to be in the drawings, but only those who give something large or small get a great new KUNM window decal.
Intelligence Squared U.S. tackles today's critical issues.
Today, the core of al-Qaeda in Afghanistan and Pakistan is on the path to defeat.
Drones, as precise as they are, end up killing innocent people.
Their remaining operatives spend more time thinking about their own safety than plotting against us.
The next topic up for debate, the U.S. drone program.
Sunday morning at 11 on 89.9 KUNM.
This is the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Kathleen Sabo. Thank you for joining us. Let's go ahead and bring in a caller, Glenn from Hemis Springs. Good morning, Glenn. Good morning, Glenn. Are you with us?
I'm here.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Yes, now we can. Thank you, Glenn. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for the program. Before the rains came, our highway from San Isidro to Los Alamos was really taking a lot of damage due to all the heavy traffic, and now the rain has made that worse. I'm asking three questions. One is the highway going to get some attention here before winter sets in? Secondly, I've seen large rocks in the shoulders around Hemis Springs here, wondering if those will be removed before winter. And then finally, the river has just been filled with this horrible-looking ash that's come down from the burn scars. And what kind of damage is that doing? We have the acequia system here, the ditch system to water our gardens and trees. And I would appreciate somebody commenting on all three of those. And thank you.
All right. Let's see who wants to take that. Secretary Myers, you want to start?
Okay.
Thanks, Glenn.
Environment might want to discuss the water issue, but the Department of Transportation has been doing an amazing job with the damage across the state. They are working diligently in virtually every single county. So to address the question, will we be addressing those issues before winter? And I would say yes. So the emergency manager with your county will be working with our department and with FEMA as we go and do our damage assessments and what needs to be done, and we'll be addressing those road issues.
All right. And Dennis McQuillan, you want to weigh in on the water issue?
Yes. With regard to the ash that runs off from the burn scars, there's really no practical way to completely stop it. We do put up barriers and things that will mitigate that. But especially after a severe burn over a large area, there is going to be ash that enters the surface water, and in some cases it will kill fish. We had a big fish kill along the Pecos River. The rivers will eventually restore, as we saw after the big wildfires we had around 2000-2001, but in the interim, it'll look bad, it'll smell bad, and it will kill fish.
Is it toxic to humans as well?
Generally not. People shouldn't be drinking water, untreated water, right out of the river, but it shouldn't be toxic to for skin contact.
And Dennis, I also read about in Madrid, coal-soaked mud seeped into homes and stores. Is that toxic or dangerous to humans and animals?
I haven't heard about the coal-soaked mud. And maybe Heidi would want to comment on that. I'm not aware of any acute health hazards from something like that.
All right, Heidi, would you like to join in?
Yes, actually, I'm not familiar with that either, so I really wouldn't be comfortable in commenting on it without knowing more.
Okay, and it's something that I read in an Albuquerque Journal story, I believe. So it's not anything someone told me privately. So,
but Kathleen,
let me just say, Dennis, please.
To the extent that there are releases of raw sewage and hazardous materials, chemicals, things like that, we do have regulations that require containment and cleanup, and this is something that's ongoing after flood events as well.
Okay, we have a comment from a caller from Chris Weller. He says, months ago when we had record drought, now we have record rains. And his question is, isn't this evidence of the impact of global warming that we have been warned about? So go ahead, Sean Bennett, you want to address that? That's a big question.
Those kind of questions are obvious because we have had a lot of volatility in the weather, and that's what that question brings
and
out.
Across the country and the world.
Yeah. And there are scientists who say that's a good indicator that we've gone into, are in, a period of global warming. But there are others who say no. So the majority of scientists, however, say that we are in a period of global warming. And this is the kind of thing that can come with that kind of change in the climate pattern.
I guess maybe another question along those lines is the drought over now in New Mexico?
The drought is, in the short term, our impacts are over. There are, for most of the state that where we had the most rain, but long term, we're not. And I'll give you an indication. We have a calculation of the amount of water flowing towards Elephant Butte past Santa Casia. And the latest number I have is about, and this is a cumulative the whole year from January 1st through about September, actually before the brunt of this event, but it's about 175,000 to 200,000 acre feet. In a normal year, it should be around 400,000. And in a wet year, it could be all the way up to 900,000 acre feet. So we have had persistent dry. And it doesn't go away with, even though this has been an extreme rain event, it doesn't eliminate all of the drought impacts. And so we have moderate drought persisting in the state. Beyond that, people might want to know that going into the winter, one of the biggest things that we look for is snowpack, and that's where we get our water resource. The snow holds the water for all of the use. And last year, we didn't have much of a snowpack. And the snow we had, it actually went, a lot of it melted into the ground or evaporated into the air, so we didn't get a lot into the rivers. The outlook looks for a period of dry through our winter right now. Well, we could be wrong, but if that's right, we still have a period of dry weather coming. So drought impacts on the short term, yes, they're mostly over. On a long term, no, we still have impact.
Well, and what I read was there's as much chance for there to be above normal as below normal as normal.
Yeah. What I just described in the outlook is something just new coming from what we call our Climate Prediction Center. It will be out in the next couple of days. Previously, we had what we call equal chances statistically, where you have a third of a chance of below, third of a chance of normal, and third of a chance above. But now it's going towards a below normal in the forecast. So that's not going to be good either. So it's good we got all of this rain, actually.
If you would like to join in our discussion, you may call us at 277-5866. That's 277-KUNM. Or you may dial our toll-free number, 1-877-899-5866, with your questions and comments. Laura Paskus, you'd like to add something?
Yeah, I just wanted to thank that audience member for bringing up the climate change issue, because even though it's impossible to say, you know, one storm is the result of climate change, and people like to talk about extreme weather and say, oh my gosh, it's climate change. It's you can't say that, but you can look at the long-term trends and what we're facing in the Southwest, which 99% of the world's climate scientists agree that human-caused climate change is occurring. And here in the Southwest, the impacts that we're looking at are warmer temperatures, and the precipitation models are unclear if we'll get more or less precipitation in the future, but we'll most certainly be getting less winter snowpack, which is what our entire infrastructure depends upon.
Well, and I wanted to get that. You and I get to that because you and I spoke about that, how in New Mexico our infrastructure is designed for specific events, but not for these more volatile events. So let's talk about that a little bit. I know you've been talking with the Bureau of Reclamation on that topic.
Right. And so we have this pretty amazing system through the Rio Grande and the Middle Rio Grande, a system of reservoirs and, you know, water that's released for different users, including cities and irrigators, and also endangered species that rely upon the water in the river. But the system is designed to capture slow, gradual melting snow. And so our system, our lifestyle is completely dependent upon these winter snows and their gradual melting. And as the folks at the Bureau of Reclamation told me yesterday, you know, 10 years of drought is not being fixed by one big weather event. So the reservoirs are, especially Elephant Butte, I believe is at 10% of capacity right now. These big extreme events also don't recharge the groundwater in the same way that a gradual consistent snow melt does. So I don't want anyone out there to think that we don't need to be worried about drought anymore just because we had this incredible rain event over the past week.
And as Sean Bennett told us, some parts of the state have very little relief. Secretary Myers, let's talk about infrastructure a little bit, because what are you hearing about damage to primary infrastructure around the state?
Well, most of the damage is roads and bridges right now, and there's probably a lot we still don't know. The reporting hasn't been extremely good, but you know, as the waters recede and we're able to actually access areas that we can't get into currently, we'll get a better assessment of that. But that's, I mean, obviously there are homes that are impacted due to water in the lower levels, that kind of thing. But most of the extreme damage is roads and bridges.
Are you hearing talk about how do we plan for the future for these kind of events, what we've just talked with Laura about? Are you hearing any of that kind of conversation when you're out touring or having it with people?
Well, certainly we're focused on that. With federal declarations, you also get a percentage of the declaration to apply toward mitigation efforts. So I have my mitigation officer also touring the damaged areas and looking at ways that we can design projects to minimize future extreme flooding events.
And where would funding come for those projects?
That's federal funding.
That's federal funding.
Right.
So the state doesn't need to be looking at that at this coming next legislative session, or?
Well, if there is a match for the federal share, and typically there always is, but I don't know what the exact percentage is for the mitigation grant, the state will pick that up, and the governor fully supports it.
Okay. Heidi, let's come back to you, and let's talk a little bit about what people might be experiencing, how they might know if they've been impacted either by mold or a contaminated standing water issue.
Right. So, you know, if a home is flooded and within 24 or 48 hours, as I mentioned earlier, if you can start to dry out materials, that's your best preventative measure. However, sometimes it's just not possible. And people will pretty much know if mold is starting to grow. We always say if you can smell, if it's that musty smell, then mold is starting to grow, or if you can see it. And with porous materials like cardboard, like books, like some furniture, you may not be able to save that and may need to be discarded. But generally with hard surfaces, we always recommend simply scrubbing it with detergent. In this case, for mold specifically, we do not recommend bleach. We just recommend detergent, scrubbing it off and letting everything dry. Of course, if there's extensive damage, such as to drywall, that may need to be removed. And on our website, we do have suggestions for hiring a professional remediation specialist if needed.
Now, Sean might agree with me here, having grown up in the Northwest. I grew up in the Northeast, and I experience mold all the time. It was a persistent smell. It's just how it is in your basement. Is it bad for some and not bad for others, or is it bad for all? I certainly didn't have that impression growing up.
Oh, so you mean exposure to mold, for example?
Yes, please.
Yeah. So, you know, some people are going to be more sensitive to mold just based on pre-existing conditions. So, for example, some people with asthma, mold is actually a trigger. That can be quite commonly a trigger for people with asthma. And so they can actually exacerbate some wheezing, coughing. So for those individuals, it's actually going to be probably more serious. However, anybody can become sensitized to mold over time. So we always recommend as soon as you smell or see mold, you need to do something about it. And really the key for mold is moisture. If that moisture is not there, then the mold is not going to be able to grow.
Okay. Dennis, anything you want to add on these issues about what people might be experiencing and how to recognize symptoms or what they might do?
Well, actually, I would like to add some information to what Sean and Laura said about the drought. There's a related issue called groundwater depletion, and this is the gradual decline of water levels in an aquifer from sustained pumping. And we've been seeing this in New Mexico since the 1940s. And during these decades where the water tables have been dropping in some of our aquifers, the cycles of wet and dry periods come and go, but we have a steady decline of the water table. The droughts can certainly make the groundwater depletion worse, but the groundwater depletion comes from the fact that in many areas we are pumping groundwater out faster than nature is putting it back in. And some of the consequences of this are that we have wells and springs that are drying up, we have subsidence and ground cracks, and we have some aquifers that will, within a period of decades, be virtually dewatered, and the communities that live there will have to find other sources of water.
So are you saying this was a good event or a bad event for that situation?
Well, getting water any way we can, I think, is generally good. There's the fact that it came in so rapidly and caused damage is not a good thing. But we do need the water, and there are some wells and springs that do respond to rainfall events. But there are a lot of wells in particular that do not respond to these rainfall events. Most, like one of the other speakers said, in many areas of the state, most of the groundwater comes from the winter snowpack that accumulates over the winter. It melts, and then it enters the aquifer in the fault zones along the mountain front. There is some recharge from these rainfall events during the monsoon season, but in the northern Sangre Cristo Mountains, most of the groundwater originates from snowpack. That's certainly the case in Santa Fe.
And, you know, I read an Albuquerque Journal article, and I saw a quotation from Wayne Sleep. He's the snow surveyor with the National Resources Conservation Service. And he said, in terms of drought relief, one of the most important features may be the way the storm is moistening mountain soils heading into the coming winter, because one of the problems the last few years was the dry soil heading into the winter, which makes a bad foundation for snowpack and spring runoff. So that's what you're talking about, I gather, Dennis.
Well, these issues are all related, but the groundwater depletion results from the fact that, and this is occurring all over the world, not just in the southwest of the United States, we are pumping groundwater out. Typically, we use it once beneficially for drinking water, and then we put it into a sewer system that either discharges into a river that eventually flows into the ocean, perhaps through a couple of dams, or in some cases it's discharged directly to the ocean. We also pump groundwater out and use it for irrigation. Some of that water evaporates and then it rains out and flows into the ocean. So the net effect on a global scale is that we are depleting our aquifers, and that groundwater is ending up in the ocean. And depending upon which study you look at right now, anywhere from perhaps 15 to 25% of the ocean rise is from the relocation of groundwater. It has nothing to do with melting ice or the thermal expansion of ocean water. It's because we're taking water out of our aquifers and putting it into the oceans.
All right. Thanks, Dennis. We're talking today about the heavy rains and flooding in New Mexico. If you would like to join me in the studio, along with my guests, Secretary of the Homeland Security and Emergency Management Department Gregory Myers, New Mexico in-depth reporter Laura Paskus, and Sean Bennett, meteorologist in charge of the National Weather Service office in Albuquerque, as well as on the phone, Heidi Kraffel with the New Mexico Department of Health, and Dennis McQuillan with the New Mexico Environment Department. You may join us in several ways. You can email comments to callinshow@kunm.org. You may post comments on our Call and Show webpage. You may call our local number, 277-5866. That's 277-KUNM. Or our toll-free number, 1-877-899-5866. With questions and comments, we'll join you after a short break.
So far, Changing Worlds, the campaign for UNM, has brought together over 50,000 generous donors with promising students, exceptional patient care and treatment, and renowned faculty throughout the many programs of the University of New Mexico. Donors take pride in connecting with the exceptional, investing in the future, and inspiring others to do the same. Learn more at FromHereWorldsChange.org, a message from the tax-exempt UNM Foundation. For two nights each year, New Mexico becomes the center of the musical world, and you're invited. Global Kirky celebrates its ninth year with 18 acts from across the globe on three stages at the National Hispanic Cultural Center in Albuquerque. Tune in to KUNM and KUNM.org on Saturday night, September 21st from 7 to midnight for highlights of the Friday performers plus live action from the main stage. Available only on KUNM 89.9 FM and KUNM.org.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Kathleen Sabo, and today we're talking about the heavy rains and flooding that New Mexico experienced last week. Secretary Myers, your department's webpage has an emphasis on personal preparedness. Talk to us a little bit about what you think people ought to be doing and what this revealed, what this event revealed about how well people are doing that.
Well, I think a good news story. In all of the disaster areas, we have established, the Red Cross has established shelters in preparing for people getting evacuated. Very few of those have actually gone to shelters. So the community support and supporting one another is very strong. But all of these events point to the personal responsibility we all have to have water and food on hand to, they always say 72 hours, 3 days, but I typically say 5 to 7 days worth. Most of these extreme events that we talked about in terms of global warming and, some of these events that are occurring are more severe than we've experienced in the past. So being prepared is essential. And there's the FEMA website, our website all has great resources to be able to look at how you can better prepare your house, your personal property for these types of events.
Is that more important in rural areas, or do experts say that's everyone's concern?
Well, interestingly, I think rural areas are a little more self-sufficient. They're a little more hardy than those of us that are living citywide. We kind of get comfortable with so many people around us that we feel like we can survive better. But the requirement is equal across all individuals, no matter where you live.
Okay. Let's go ahead and bring in our next caller. It's Judy from Albuquerque. Good morning, Judy, and thank you for joining our conversation.
Thank you very much. I'm concerned about these comments, we're depleting the groundwater, we're going to have to find water elsewhere. There was a similar comment from the CDC that was looking into the contamination from Kirtland and Sandia into our aquifer. We'll have to find water elsewhere. Where is my question?
Dennis, you were talking about that. You want to go ahead and start? Thanks so much, Judy, for
sure.
Calling.
Well, the depletion of groundwater is more severe in aquifers like the Ogallala on the east side of New Mexico, where you have a very finite saturated thickness. In Albuquerque, you're fortunate and you're sitting on a deep alluvial basin that has thousands of feet of vertical saturation of water. There are contamination plumes throughout various aquifers in the state, and other programs within the Environment Department oversee the investigation in the cleanup of those plumes. But Albuquerque is the water table has been dropping in many areas throughout the state, including Albuquerque, but you're not in danger of running out within decades, say, like some of the communities on the east side of the state.
Okay, anyone else want to chime in on that?
Well, it's a problem all across the Southwest, if you think about it. There's the Central Arizona Project brings water from the Colorado River. Colorado River starts in the Rocky Mountains. It waters the entire Southwest, including parts of New Mexico by its link to the Rio Chama, which brings water in here, and we're part of that compact. So it is a problem across the Southwest. Los Angeles, for example, gets water from the Colorado River. So does Tijuana, Mexico, and other parts. So it is definitely an issue. We've got more and more people coming to the region, and the water resource needed is finite. So it's actually good. We get occasional good rains, but it's not good, the hazard that comes with that
rain.
And
just to remind our listeners that you are the meteorologist in charge at the Albuquerque Office of the National Weather Service. I touched on this in my intro. I don't know if we actually got to this specific question, but are we to expect more of these kind of severe events in the future here in New Mexico, or was that a rare occurrence?
Well, it's a rare occurrence in statistical terms. They put a number called a return period. What's the probability of this event? And that's a 1,000-year event. But it could happen next year. So that's often misunderstood. In terms of statistics, it's a 1,000-year return, which means a very low probability, obviously a very high impact.
But again, those probabilities might be off given how things are shifting with climate change?
The database is going to be changing a little bit, so we have to reanalyze the data and come up with new statistics.
Secretary Myers, let's talk a little bit about how the state of New Mexico is helping people prepare for these kind of severe weather issues that might occur. What's going on with your department, the Department of Homeland Security and Emergency Management, and other departments?
Our primary means of reaching out to the public is through the county and municipality emergency managers. We do have a booklet that we publish every year and distribute all the events, and any emergency manager in the county will have that. Has lots of great tips on what individuals can do to prepare and who to call. So we try to take the preparedness down to the very local level as much as we can, and we provide support as required.
Okay. Laura, I wanted to ask you, let's talk a little bit more about the Bureau of Reclamation and some of the forward-thinking things that they are looking at doing in order to prepare for these events in the future.
Okay, I'm not actually sure I can talk so much about what they're planning in the future,
okay.
But I would love to. Something that was really cool that did happen on this last flood event is because of the Endangered Species Act requires that federal and state water managers keep water within the Middle Rio Grande for the benefit of the silvery minnow and the southwestern willow flycatcher. And one of the things that the agencies, state and federal agencies, have gotten together to do is create these restoration projects. They're essentially these off-channel areas where when the springtime floods come and the river rises, the water goes into these side channels and the fish can spawn. And maybe some willows will grow for the benefit of the bird, too. And what we saw happen last Friday was at the San Felipe gauge on the Rio Grande, the river was at about 9,500 CFS, which is huge. For the Middle Rio Grande, that's huge. And so as everybody in Albuquerque was preparing for that water to come down, I know you guys were sending out alerts. I listened. Stay away from the river. Don't go and gawk at it. And as we were waiting for that big wall of water to come down, what happened was a lot of that water was captured in these side channels. And so these restoration projects that were mandated under the Federal Endangered Species Act that lots of people do like to fuss about on a regular basis actually had these great mitigation impacts for protecting downstream infrastructure and benefiting flooding. So by the time that 9,500 CFS surge from San Felipe made it to Albuquerque early Saturday morning, I think it was at about 4,500 CFS. And so, I mean, I think that's a really cool story of how having forward thinking, being concerned about the health of the river, being concerned about endangered species can have these really great impacts on human communities too.
Was that a surprising impact, or in designing these projects, did people consider that that might happen?
You know, I'm sure that they anticipated that they would capture and slow some of the water. I don't know that anybody expected them to work quite that well.
Quite as well as they did.
Flood control.
All right. Let's bring in our next caller. It's Alan from Albuquerque. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, I've had a curiosity for a while, and you guys are perfect to answer it. I read a hypothesis by a researcher probably 5-6 years ago, and his theory was that the drought that the Southwest has been seeing for the last number of years is not actually a drought, that it's actually a return to normal, and that the last several decades have been unusually wet. Now, what's interesting about this is I recorded some anecdotal evidence of this very thing a few years ago, completely accidentally. I was taking some photographs around Ash Fork, Arizona, and I was duplicating historic photographs that were taken in 1943. And I noticed that the foliage, the juniper cover, is much thicker in my photographs than it was in the photographs taken in 1943. Does anybody have any comment on that? Is this actually a drought, or are we just returning to what the Southwest is normally?
Well, thanks so much for your call, Alan. And I see Sean Bennett from the National Weather Service leaning toward his microphone. Sean, go right ahead.
Well, it makes me think of I've seen some climate information that goes back to what we call paleoclimate, restructured climate from back to 1,000 years. And the Southwest had periods of what we call mega droughts, was several decades, hundreds of years. And so these cycles of drought and wet, they are cycles, but we are in an area where we get long-term drought and then periods of wet. The last time it was really wet in the Southwest, I won't say it that way, the last time we had Elephant Butte filled up all the way was when we had a period of year in, year out, wet in the 80s, and that led to filling up Elephant Butte. And so it was around 100%. We're now, what you said, 10% or so. It was 2 before. Elephant Butte, to me, is sort of like a canary in the coal mine indicator of the kind of persistent drought we've had lately. I couldn't say definitive that the background is that we're always in drought, but we certainly have these fluctuations that are common. We can see these in our database. And over the last 10 years, we've had periods a year or two of wet, then dry, then wet, then dry. And to explain that, it has to do with oceans, too. It has to do with El Nino, a southern oscillation, another thing we call the North Pacific, that cadal oscillation in a negative phase and a positive phase. We're in a negative phase, and we're in an ENSO neutral period, which results in an overall sort of drought-like condition, which we normally associate with La Nina across the Southwest. So in general, we're in a drought period. And as I said, we're expecting drier than normal conditions going into the winter.
Dennis McQuillan from the Environment Department. We've got an email comment. A listener says, I'm surprised to hear your guess state ocean levels rising has nothing to do with the melt-off of the ice glaciers, etc. Can you defend your position in the light of data from the leading global scientific agencies, including NASA? And it could be that we don't have enough time for you to do that, but how would you like to respond to that listener?
Well, I don't believe I said that the rising ocean had nothing to do with melting ice and thermal expansion. I was talking about the 15% to 25% of the ocean rise that has been attributed to the relocation of groundwater.
Okay, so there you go, listener. There's Dennis's response. Dennis, let's stick with you for a minute because, we've heard about what some water systems are experiencing, what some well users are experiencing and or could be experiencing. But those of us in large metropolitan areas or cities, Albuquerque, Santa Fe, do we have anything we need to be looking out for in the aftermath with regard to our water that we're drinking or using?
Well, with regard to the water systems in big municipalities, you are covered under the umbrella of protection by the Federal Safe Drinking Water Act. And we make sure that the water being distributed by these water systems meets the standards for potable water supply. And I think you're in pretty good shape. The water utilities also have, most of them have wellhead protection plans and source water plans where they anticipate events like this and fortify their sources of water from flooding, from contamination, and so on.
Okay. Thanks so much, Dennis.
Kathleen?
Yes, Heidi, please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. I just wanted to interject. You know, we've been talking about drought and flooding back and forth. And, you know, oftentimes residents on private wells, when there's flooding, they become concerned about their water quality. And we talked about this a little bit earlier. And I don't know if listeners are aware, but about 20% of the population in New Mexico receive their water from a private well. And I just wanted to let listeners know that the New Mexico Department of Health has a private wells program. And on our website, NewMexicoNMTracking.org, that we actually have resources for private well owners about how to maintain their well, how to test for contaminants, because sometimes during drought with less water, that can concentrate contaminants. So I just wanted everyone to know that NMTracking.org can be a source for information if you are on a private well.
All right, and we're coming to the close of our program. I do want to thank you, Heidi Kraffel, with the Department of Health here in New Mexico, and Dennis McQuillan with the New Mexico Environment Department. Thank you for being on our line to answer calls today. And we do have a number of links up. Of course, people can go to your websites as well, but they can certainly go to KUNM.org and find links. Laura Paskus, in closing, what would you like to leave our listeners with today?
You know, I would actually love to send a shout out and a huge thank you to all the emergency workers who have kept people safe and worked through the night, and, you know, the National Weather Service folks who put out alerts and kept everybody informed. There are so many great people looking out for the rest of us, so thank you.
All right, thank you, Laura. And Secretary Myers with the Department of Homeland Security and Emergency Management, tell us what people need to be looking out for, anyone who's out there who's suffered damage and wondering where they can find relief.
Well, the most important thing to do is photograph, document the damage that you have, so that as we get around to doing the assessment in your area, you have the documentation that we need to proceed quickly.
Okay. Thank you so much. And Sean Bennett, what do you want to leave our listeners with today?
Well, flooding is the number one killer in the United States. Water kills more people from floods than any other cause, any other natural hazard. So we say, turn around, don't drown. When you see a flooded roadway, don't try to cope.
You know, and I saw something that you put out, 6 inches of water, what the power that has, 18 inches of water.
18 inches will lift any 4x4 SUV. You think you can get through it, but the power of moving water is tremendous.
So
turn around, don't drown.
Turn around, don't drown. Thanks to our guests this morning, Heidi Kraffel of the New Mexico Department of Health and Dennis McQuillan of the New Mexico Environment Department, Homeland Security and Emergency Management Department Secretary Gregory Myers, reporter Laura Paskus, and Sean Bennett of the National Weather Service for making themselves available to our listeners. Thank you all. Thank you. And thanks to our callers for helping to develop our discussion today. Thanks to our engineer, Roman Garcia, and our assistant engineer, Jeff White, assistant producers Steve Emmons and Michael Hess. Andy Lyman has handled our phones today. Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer. I'm Kathleen Sabo, and I do want to mention just briefly the passing of our former general manager and someone who was a mentor to me when I began, Jane Bloom. So blessings to you, Jane. I'm Kathleen Sabo. This has been the KUNM Call-In Show on KUNM, news and music that connect from the University of New Mexico.